interesting guest. I know you will agree when you've met him and heard his story. He's a man who has seen good times and he's seen bad times. He's seen depression times, and he'll tell you his own story when he had to go out and shoot rabbits to eat and to feed some of his friends. But we're getting a little ahead of our story, so we'll tell you now that our guest is Fred Lissotti. Fred, you retired recently. When did you retire?
1973.
And how many years had you spent with Inco at that time?
40 years and 8 months.
Well, and what were you doing at Inco when you retired, Fred?
I was a shift boss at the mill.
And how old are you now?
I'm 61.
All right, Fred, we've got the vital statistics taken care of. Where are you from, your hometown?
My hometown is Coppercliff.
Well, that's coming, starting about the center of things for this broadcast, you would agree, eh? Well, now, what about your father? Was he a Coppercliff native, or where did he come into this picture?
My father came from Italy.
About what year?
And he came over to Canada around 1904, and then went to the United States, and there he married my mother and brought her into Canada around 1908. And they lived in Victoria Mine. That's where he worked. And I have a brother born there in 1911.
Well, now I'm going to interrupt Fred at this point, and I know that you have an interesting story about why the Desotti family left Italy and told to you, I think, by your cousin. Now, what is that story?
The story was that in the old days in Italy, it looked like that the oldest brother was the boss of the... They had a big farm in it, and he was the boss of the farm. So everything, he made all the decisions. And I guess he had a gambling bug in him, for he took the family money and went to Monte Carlo and came back broke. So that was the point where they all spread out. Some of my father's brothers went to South America and France, and my father came into the United States at the time. Came into Canada,
Canada.
And then from Canada went to the United States for a while.
Well, what a great story, you know?
Yeah.
I like that. Now, then as you say, your father was in Canada, went to the United States where he married, then he was back to Canada to Coppercliff, where your older brother was born in 19...
No, not to Coppercliff, to Victoria Mine.
Victoria Mine, right.
Yes.
And your older brother was born there in around...
1911.
1911, eh? And then you arrived about what year?
1913. I was born in Coppercliff.
Right. Now, just while we're on the subject of the family, well, what about brothers and sisters? Are they living? Where are they now? What are they doing?
I have five sisters and two brothers.
Well, where are they now?
I have a brother in Violin, New Jersey. And I have a brother that's living in the old house up in the Crow's Nest in Coppercliff. And I have two sisters in Coppercliff. One is married to Matt Canapini, living up the hill, they call it. And I have another sister, Angie, married to Bert Piccini, living up at the hill.
Right, now, you speak up the hill here with a certain amount of affection, Fred, and I know you've got a lot of affection for it. But let's go back to it now. This community, particularly when you, not, it's not true now, but certainly not to the same extent, but when you were growing up, this community was sort of a little Italy, is that right?
Right. It was all Italians living around that section. No one
sense,
else.
It would make a sense for Italians to get together, I suppose, eh?
Yes, it was. It would make sense because they had the language barrier, which was hard for them, so by being together like that, they could help one another, and they needed lots of help at that time.
And as you say, there was a street or a track or something that was the other side of the track.
Well, right? That track was the dividing line. It was sort of it was like the boundary line for peace and war.
Like the Berlin, East and West Berlin or something.
Well, yes.
Not quite that bad. We're kidding a little bit here, but particularly as a kid, I mean, you'd have your own ball teams and so on, I guess.
Yes, we had our own ball team, which we called the Vaticans.
Right.
And We played with different teams in the area, the Canoe Club, the Silver Foam team, right, and the Coppercliff team, which was the ones on the other side of the tracks, and Coniston and so forth.
Hello, Fred. be frank about it. Those are pretty good days, eh?
They were the best days. Yeah.
I think so, eh?
Yes.
But you look back when you were a kid and well, then, when you finished school, there wasn't too much money around. You, when I say finished school, finished public school, I guess, you had to go to work. Is that where, or when you were going to school, you worked with some cows, or what was that story?
Well, I always seemed to, because I was living up the crow's nest and all the others had to come around that way, I seemed to be the leader, and though I sort of took it upon myself to be the boss of this, taking these cows out in the pasture. So I ended up getting 50 cents a month from each owner of a cow to look after them and taking them up to pasture and then taking them back home.
Well, that's not bad. There's how many owners?
There was about 30 owners.
30 plus, people with cows. They didn't get their own milk in there.
Plus there was a fellow up there named Pacini that had a herd of his own, and that he would sell the milk to the individual families.
Well, it's different now, but this is 1920s we're talking about.
This
now.
Is in the 1920s,
the,
yes.
The middle 20s, I would say, around in there, eh? Now, was not at this time Clarabelle or a Lady McDonald Lake or something? What was that story, Fred? Was that lake not drained or raised
that
or something?
That lake today is the North Mine. They drained it and has become the North Mine. And right back at the North Mine was the place where we used to send our cows to pasture in the 20s. And it was beautiful trees and grass there at the time, and all kinds of animals.
Right.
Yes.
Times changed, but here you were as a kid of about
nine or ten
years being a cowboy, or sort of thing.
Right. Right.
dear. So then, when you, but you then made some money and you took a woodworking course at tech school. Is that not right, sir?
Yes, I went there for 1 year and then I had to quit again because there was no money and I had to go to work.
All right. That's the story of a lot of people. I think that your mother made cheese and everybody worked at home. Is that
yes, we made our own cheese and we used milk for lots of our nourishment. Milk and bread.
Right.
For breakfast. And
how did you heat the family home?
We had a Quebec heater, and to keep the heat in at night, we used to close the kitchen door so we'd have a little extra heat, and the stove pipes were just like an octopus going around the rooms. It's a wonder the place didn't burn down.
Right.
And you get up in the morning, you could see your breath. It was so cold in the room.
Fred, some of the kids today, now mind you, when I say kids, I mean teenagers and so on, they don't really understand those days, do they? Have you found that to be true?
I find that to be true because I have two sons and I try to explain things to them, but it doesn't seem to fit on them. They just don't understand the hard times it was during the depressions.
I guess not. Of course, maybe it's a different world. Maybe we can't judge for them, but I think anybody who went through those years as a teenager certainly remembers them. There's no question about
that. Yes, I think we all remember it because it was hard times and it was real hard, tough times.
But let's not forget that you said a little earlier it was pretty good times too.
Well, yes, we made our good times because we had nothing but the little bit we got. We enjoyed it and appreciated it and we made something out of it.
Fred, incidentally, friends, we're talking today with Fred Desani. Fred, your father became ill around about this time, and did you not get a job delivering for a butcher shop? What was that story?
My first job was working for Pianozzi's meat market or butcher shop, and I had to start at 7 in the morning, look after get the horse ready to deliver orders, and we'd work on a Saturday. We'd work 11 o'clock at night.
What would you get paid for a day like that?
Get about $15 a month, $12 a month, I think I started.
Right. And you delivered then with a horse delivery, a meat wagon, literally, that you
yes,
delivered with,
yes,
I guess,
yes,
eh?
Yes, yes. There was no paved roads at that time. We were just dirt roads. And we delivered with the horse and the wagon. And sometimes with a bicycle if it was...
Do you remember, what was the name of the fellow you delivered with you? Do you remember his name? You worked another boy at the time.
Well, there was this Tamalelli.
Yeah?
We call him Diffin.
Yeah?
He worked there, too, at the time. And there was Johnny Camelucci.
Right.
He delivered for a while, too, when I was there.
Do you remember any of the families that are maybe gone now, but that you delivered to way back there in the middle 20s?
Well, I used to always have a great time to go to the Riders and Weiss, because they used to do a lot of kidding, and they had twins at this Weiss place. You couldn't tell them apart. They were identical twins, and they used to fool me all the time, and I used to always remember them as one of my real good customers.
Are the any of the Riders or the Weiss family still around?
No, I understand. No, I would say maybe they're... It might be some around, but I couldn't tell you. No, I don't know.
You can't tell now,
no.
Right? But you didn't remain indefinitely with this butcher. You moved to another butcher. What was that?
Well, I got an offer for more money, and Falcioni was starting up a butcher shop just down the street from Pinozzi's, and he offered to learn to have me cut meat inside, which I wanted to do, and so I quit Pinozzi's and started with Falcioni's with a few dollars more a month. And with the understanding I'd become a meat cutter.
But this time you weren't delivering to the Italians. You had to change your tactics a little bit, right?
Yes. It seemed that Falcioni had all the Finn customers on town, and I had to learn Finn in a hurry. But the one thing that stood in my favor was Falcioni knew quite a bit of Finn, and he told me the first thing he says they'll be asking is pork and sila or something like that. I've lost my fin now.
Right.
But it was pork. Most of the time they would order was pork.
Right.
And well, he told me how to go about collecting money. It was Raja, and he sort of gave me a little bit of instructions, and I got along fine, and I really picked up the fin language for a while, and I lost it now.
Fine, but then you moved on to construction work or something. What was that, Fred?
Well, then there was the Fraser Brace for building the refinery at the time. And I got to know one of the foremen real well. He was a young fella. And he asked me if I wanted to work down there. And I told him I was only 16. Well, he said, you come on down and I'll give you a job. And he said, we'll pass you off as 18. So I went down and I got hired. And my first job was delivering... as a water boy, delivering water to the men on the different sites. And then I was transferred up to the coal plant, where the coal plant is at the refinery, drying sand with two old fellows. We used to go over with the wagon and get this sand just a little ways from the coal plant, and then bring it over and put it over the fire we had going, and dry off this sand. They used it then for the tank house. I understand we're using that sand for the tank house.
Well, you carried on from there, Fred. What happened then after that? Well,
then the refinery was going to start in production, and they asked if anybody wanted to go into the refinery to put an application in. And I always wanted to be an engineer on one of the little dinkies there, and so I decided to put my name down for a dinky operator plus a conductor on the train of first choice. In the meantime, CIL were hiring people, and I went put an application at the CIL, and in the same time I found out that they were hiring at the mill. So I went in and see W.T. McDonald at the general office and asked for a job.
When he asked, yeah, this is prior to the Depression. Things haven't got tough yet. Things are booming at this point, eh?
Well, yes, there is quite a bit of construction work going on right now, yes.
Okay, carry on, Fred.
Well, then he said, well, how old are you? I said, 16. Well, he says, you're too young. You have to be 18 to be hired. And I said, no, I understand. On surface, it's 16. So he told me he checked it out, and he went and he come back, and he says, yes, you're right. He said, you start 12 o'clock tonight at the mill, which I did on about August the 26th, 1930.
Well, that was a very good start, but it didn't last for too long.
No, I worked there a year and 1 month, I think it was. And I got laid off. It was right at the Depression time then. People were finally getting tough.
Things were finding it really tough about that time.
Yes.
So, with no work and a pretty good-sized hunger for yourself and friends, you did some hunting right around about now. What was that?
Well, then I bought a .22 and I bought it through the catalog, Eaton's catalog, and I used to go out back around the Murray, from Murray Mine to Whitewater Lake. In between there was a swamp. I could go there every day of the week and get myself six rabbits, and I'd clean them and skin them, and I would feed our family, or my family, and then I'd give surplus away to the other families around the hill that were just bad shape as I was.
That's a great story. I guess it's good to hear that story again, or to hear it now for the first time. But I guess you got a little tired of rabbit stew, is that
well,
right?
Well, rabbit to me now, I haven't eaten rabbit for about 30-some years, but I think I'm going to try again one of these days, because I used to love it one time, but I think I ate too much during that Depression time.
Fred, we're Depression, mind you, and you're eating what you can. In this case, rabbits help supplement the family meal, but did Orford not start up around about now?
Yeah, the Orford building started up about that time. So I got, I don't know, I guess I was lucky. I got called in and I got started working the Orford building for a while, but then things started to slow up again, and we'd be out there with maybe 200 or 300 men at the gate, and five or six or maybe a dozen or so was picked. So I got tired going down there and just standing around, seeing I wasn't getting nowhere. I didn't go back no more.
Well, that made sense. So, but you did get another job delivering.
Yes. Shortly after that, I got a job with Nazareno Taz. And he had a store opening up at where the International Hotel is today. He had got it from Maxi Angelo's, or he bought it from, I understand. So I started work from Carpercliff, though. I was delivering the orders and getting orders from Carpercliff and delivering the orders in Coppercliff from the store that they had in Sudbury, the meat store they had in Sudbury.
Fred, and did you not around about this time work with somebody whom we've had as a guest on our show, Bruno Toss, isn't that right?
Yeah, Bruno Toss was the boss, was actually the boss's son. I was working with him at the store and at the International Hotel. This happened afterwards when the fellow that was working there left in a hurry for some reason, and they made me their butcher and operator of the store, and Bruno was the boss's son, was sort of the working with me at the time.
Great. Now, and this is Depression, and money is kind of tough, but somehow or other, I think you always manage to have two bits or half a dollar or something in your pocket. Is that right? Even in the depths of the Depression.
Yes, I was fortunate. I wasn't making very much, but I always seemed to have had a quarter in my pockets, which I was very, very lucky to have. But I was able to always have a quarter at least in my pockets.
Well, then, where did you go from after running this this store?
Well, then the Inco was starting up. They were starting to unload. They were loading mat that they had stockpiled up near where the old curling rink was. And I got a job there in February 1933 and to load this mat into these boxcars. And I remember one day in particular that it went down to 60 below zero, and I was working 12 at night, 8 in the morning at 60 below zeros, and I froze my ears for the first time in my life. And that, from that time on, I used to.
You wore a cap, right?
I wore a cap from that time on. But before, I never wore anything on my head. I thought it was pretty tough, but.
Not that tough. 60 below, eh? Fred, from there, you went, it seems to me, to the roaster. Is that right, sir?
Yes, the roasters were starting up about that time, and we were all sent over to start up to work in the roasters. And my first job in the roasters was on D floor, and I thought I was in hell at the time, because it was just one mess of dust and gas you couldn't see for. So then, I only was lucky, I only stayed there about a week, And I went up to the top floor where they fed the roasters, and I worked there for a short while, and then they put me down onto the furnaces. And on these furnaces, I worked with some great men, such as Bill Rivers. I worked with Cipitelli and his son. I worked with Sanchione. I worked with O'Neill. I worked with Sid Smith. I worked with Uguccione, which was a great guy to work with, and different other fellows.
Oh, these are great names, Fred, in Inco history. And
yes,
and,
they were all good. They were the best for hardworking men. You couldn't ask for a better group than that bunch there. They were a really hardworking group, and conscientious about their work all the time.
But you you suffered, your health suffered a little, pleurisy. Now, what happened there?
Well, I got a touch of pleurisy after while I was working down there. I was a roofman on the furnace at that time, and I guess fellas that were roofmen at that time know what he had to go through. But anyway, I got this pleurisy, and I decided the mill was starting to pick up at about the time, and I thought I'd try to get back on at the mill. So I see my old boss, Ken Clark, and asked him if I could get back at the mill, and he says, sure, you get a transfer from your superintendent, and we'll put you on. But it just seemed there was a little friction between the two superintendents at the time, so I was put off. So I ended up recuperating on my health.
And coaching a hockey club,
and coaching
right?
a juvenile hockey club from up the hill, which were a bunch of nice, good hockey players at the time.
Right.
So I stayed coaching there for a while until I got a call from a friend up in Timmins area telling me to go up to Timmins, that there was lots of work up there and I would make good money up there. But I didn't want to leave Coppercliff. I had my roots in Coppercliff and friends and all that, so I decided I'd try once more to see Pete McDonald, which was the superintendent of the smeller at the time, if he would give my transfer, let it go through. So I went to his home, and after giving him a good story, I convinced him that that I was either going to quit or I was going anyway. So he let me have my transfer, and I went up to the mill in 1935.
Right, and then that was it then, eh? You stayed with the mill, is that
yes,
right, Fred?
That's the last. I stayed right to the mill till I was pensioned off.
Well, now, on another topic, you got yourself married, Fred, somewhere along the line here. When was
that? I got married in 1941.
And who was the young lady?
Her name was Lena Giambattista from Sudbury.
And where did you meet the lady?
I met her at a dance at the Italian, where the Italian Hall is today, an Easter Sunday dance.
Now, as we often ask, this sort of was the lightning struck, or love at first sight, or something like that?
Well, let's say lightning struck, because I kind of fell for it.
Something happened.
Yeah,
right there.
Right.
Well, now, what sort of family have you got, Fred?
I have two girls and two boys.
What are their names? Where are they? What are they doing?
I have the oldest girl. She's a nurse here in General Hospital in Sudbury, married. And I have another girl that's married and living in Missoula, Montana. And I have two boys. One is going to the University of Windsor for law, and one is going to Kingston University for economics.
Fred, we started out this little talk now. You were telling us that you, in effect, grew up on the other side, the wrong side of the tracks or something. You went right through the Depression, but I think that your story, I'm going to say that it's a success story. Will you agree with me?
Well, I would say so, too. Yes, everything turned out fine for me. My family's turned out good, which was the big thing, and everything else turned out fine. I really can't say I had it too tough.
Too tough, eh? I mean, the Depression or not, the times tough or not, things worked out not too badly.
Yeah.
Some of the fellows that you kicked around with back in the days, through those Depression days, like, was it
Louis Simonato?
Yeah, how were some of these other fellows?
And there was Boogie Signoretti, Army Didoni, Bert Puccini, Guinea Bertulli, the Early Boys, and Neftaz, Oh, I could name a lot more, but Johnny Chiquette was a real good friend of mine. I can't leave him out because we did a lot of cow punching together. So,
Fred, we don't want to miss anybody, but I hope that some of these fellows are listening to the show. They maybe are now. Hey, are you, when you find out about the show, you must make it right to them and let them phone them and let them know about the show coming on, eh?
I will.
All right. Now, you tell me, Fred, that... Well, first of all, you've pretty good shape. There's some jobs you don't want, but you're finding time lying a little heavily on your hands. Is that right?
Well, I find the winter time it drags along. I would like to have something to do in the winter time more than what I'm doing right now, but I have to wait and see.
All right. If somebody would be interested in having you do some work for them, couldn't they give you a call or something?
As long as it's not no 12 to 8 shift, no night shift.
No night shift, see?
Anything that's on the daytime, I maybe decide
on. All right, how about a phone number or something? Or an address, street address or something?
Well, they
for
could...
fun, see if anything happens here.
Well, if they wanted to, they could phone 566-1944 and...
566-1944. 1944.
Yes.
All right, see Fred, if anybody phones, and maybe some of your old pals from the Depression days will phone with some funny jobs. Now, finally, Fred, it's been great fun talking to you. We said that you haven't had it easy. You've done it the hard way. We agree together, that I think your life is a success story. Your philosophy of life, I think, has been pretty much to take things as they come. Is that right, or how would you express that?
Well, I say take one thing at a time. Don't worry too much for the future. I think it's a pretty good idea not to worry too much. It just makes you sick.
All right, friends. Our friends, or at least our guest today, has been Fred Desati. He retired in April of 1973 after 40 years and 8 months with Inco, at which time he was a shift boss in the mill. We say thank you very much to Fred Desati for being our guest on Memories and Music.